it will give you no confidence in public procurement. And all the nonsense I've listened to Pascal Donoghue saying, oh, after the IMF review, that we've got public procurement policy in order. You still haven't got it in order. So they're saying the detailed findings are they underestimated the project. They completely misread the cost of this, and therefore you can't blame it on an overrun because they never had their figures right. Think of a number and double it, in other words. Execution costs, then they go through it. Consequential, okay. They're saying, it seems to me, how can you not know what the bloody VAT rate is? That seems to be not a contingency. Right, Grenfell Tower said for every high-rise building you need more sprinklers. I accept that. And then you have with the design team a misunderstanding between the contractors and the design team about the unit cost of things and the amount of things, like the amount of electrical cables. Now, all of this is very vaguely worded, but it goes into the residual risk. This is going forward, even more risk. Incomplete design, provisional sums allocated to design, contract exclusions. There could be a further percent escalation on this. Schedule adherence. In other words, any further delay in time is going to put up the price more. Governance controls still not in place. Program alignment. I mean, this gives PwC a huge error. If this ends up costing 2.4 billion, I wouldn't be surprised. And so what are their recommendations at the end of the day? They're saying the project control environment should be overhauled. Like, what the bloody hell is the project control environment? That means clueless in Seattle. Comprehensive plans should be developed to mitigate the residual risks identified. This is just bland generalities that would not be tolerated in the private sector for one second. I mean, I just can't understand how young ministers just cannot assert their authority, how the body politic is basically incompetent of dealing with such matters. We'll have Stephen Donnelly, who has a private sector background, in studio after 5 o'clock, but I am truly shocked. I'm shocked, number one, that the cost is definitely likely to go over 2 billion. And it seems even on the fitting out and the high-tech solutions, I mean, at no stage did someone say, and see, the point is this, if we go back to 2014-15 and someone said, well, by the way, if you're going to build the world-class, most expensive hospital in the world, it's going to cost you 2 billion, would people have said, well, actually, within the health service, there's better things we can spend 2 billion on? Of course, the clinicians, the paediatricians will never say that because they're empire building. I mean, but the reality is that and also the report is singularly failing on any form of international cost comparisons between Scandinavia, between New York or any other hospitals to say per bed, what sort of value for money are we getting? So this, of course, it names nobody. It names nobody, which means that you've got to take a blanket approach to saying that the systems in the Department of Health and the public expenditure and reform are not fit for purpose. I am absolutely livid about it, and I've only read it in the last hour. I can assure you by the time I get to the Tonight Show tonight, I'll be absolutely spitting fire.
Yeah, we have noticed some of the things. Yeah, I've got smaller, yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
like what?
Crisps, particularly. Chocolate bars, yeah, packet crisps, certainly.
Because their price margins are obviously increasing if, you know, the product is cheaper to make. So, no, I think they're just hoping or assuming everyone's gone blind and they're going to give free spectacles to everybody.
Well, the Christmas tins of sweets, maybe the Easter eggs now, I think maybe all the seasonal stuff.
Any cleaning products, or do you notice has a change?
I haven't noticed that. I don't do the cleaning. I have someone, I guess I have a man that does all that for me.
Oh, excellent.
All right, you actually have lots of notes here of things that you never thought about. Bars, crisps and so on. For example, Jaffa cakes, they took two out of the packet.
They did, and digestives were reduced slightly as well. Now, the company said at the time that they hadn't changed the size and weight of the individual biscuits. And they had recommended...
just less biscuits.
Just right. Less, but they had said they hadn't... they said they reduced the RRP to match that, but that's not... in their remit, you know, it's the shops that decide. Sharing bags of Maltesers, M&Ms and Minstrels were reduced by 15%. Mars said they'd been absorbing the rising costs for some time and they didn't take the decision lightly. Green and Blacks, you know, the posh chocolate bars.
Oh, I couldn't afford those. I just look at those.
Their standard bar went from 100 grams to 90 grams. Now, to News Talk, they said that's an industry-wide trend. It happens for many reasons, including food producers being encouraged to reduce portion size, you know, because of public health.
But it just isn't biscuits and sweets we're talking about.
No, so over the course of 2018, Aptamil reduced the standard size of its infant formula. So that's a pretty, you know, that's a product that you wouldn't be maybe looking out for. It went from 900 grams to 800 grams while the price stayed the same. Now, I contacted the parent company Danone to ask why, and they said the move to 800 grams was industry-wide. They developed a new formula which had extensive research and innovation and production behind it. So basically, they're saying that's not shrinkflation because the customer is getting a new formulation for the same price. Cereal. The family box of Kellogg's Corn Flakes went from 790 grams to 720. Kellogg's gave us a statement. They said the weight of some packs has changed in response to demand for bigger boxes on some of our cereals and to tackle...
Bigger boxes but smaller content.
Wait, listen for this. And to tackle an overfill issue causing a quality issue on others. So they don't determine the price, but they reckon that a 30 gram bowl works out at 13 cents the same as 6 years ago. So in 2016, Which magazine, you know, the very famous British...
Consumer magazine.
They highlighted that Tropicana 1 litre went to 850 mils. Unclear now whether that affected the Republic of Ireland. The standard Andrex roll went from 240...
Don't tell me they took away the toilet tissues. 200... The loo paper they took away. The sheets.
240 sheets went to 221.
Like, you know that one with the advert with the lovely little puppy and the toilet roll? They went from 221 to 190 sheets. Well, and of course, you'd never notice.
Yeah, so in a statement to News Talk, they said, we always try to offset any changes in cost. In some instances, it's been necessary to reduce the number of sheets per roll to maintain quality and deliver a better overall cleaning experience. Now, so since 2016...
And with the diarrhea that our politicians have, they'll be needing more sheets, not less.
And I'm concerned about what's happening in Europe. First of all, my concern is obviously peaked from the election of Donald Trump in the United States. I'm not going to go on about Donald Trump, less said the better, really, but he's in the White House. Hard to believe, really. He's got an extreme form of politics. It's anti-equality. It's anti-women. It's anti-integration. It's Islamophobic. It's anti-migrant. It's anti-everything that's not white, Rust Belt American, really. And we are seeing echoes of that in Europe. And I'm concerned that for the first time in my lifetime, and I don't mind saying, Ivan, I'm nearly as old as you now, I'm 51 now. For the first time in my lifetime, I think I'm detecting, I hope I'm wrong. You said something to me just before we started. I hope you're right and you're wrong.
Well, no, my point is this. Where is the evidence in Ireland of the rise of the far right? Renew did very poorly in the election. A lot of established TDs lost their seat. Any poll I look at, leaving aside the fragmentation of the left, basically shows in some total forms the centre parties more or less holding their own.
Yeah, well, you see, you're looking at it as from a political student and commentator's point of view, and that's, and I understand that. And if you look at it from that point of view, you're correct. I don't think Renew is a good example. First of all, Renew launched itself as a party in the middle of the austerity era when there was a wave of anti-austerity, and it launched itself as a party.
Take your pick. Who on the right do you think is making traction?
So I think, well, politically at the moment, very, very few. But what I'm detecting...
That's my point.
Yeah, but at the moment, that's why we need to reflect, Ivan. They're not at the gates just yet. But the 1930s in Germany didn't start in the 1930s. They started in the 1920s. It didn't begin with gas chambers, it ended with gas chambers.
I submit to you that Jim Breslin, the Secretary General of the Department of Health, his position is untenable, that Simon Harris's position is untenable, and also every member of the Hospital Development Board, Paediatric Hospital Development Board, their position is untenable. And until someone feels that actually my job, we went through this with the Gardaí, my job is on the line here unless something is done, it's actually kind of a bit of a laissez-faire thing.
Right, fair question. I'm not going to make any comment on civil servants because I'm not within the department and I'm not in any position to make
The accounting officer.
Doesn't matter. He's a civil servant and the appropriate people to comment on that are government, right? So I'm not going to be commenting on civil servants because no one except the minister in there has all the facts on that. So I'm not commenting on civil servants.
You don't
servants.
Have enough facts from this report to know that there was no... It actually says there was no governance of this.
No,
everyone believed the design team. Everyone believed the board. No one challenged. No one raised any scepticism about these things. That is a dereliction of duty. These people who are paid good money, I'm sorry, they messed up.
They may have messed up, but I'm not commenting on senior civil servants without having the facts from within the department. And I know you'll appreciate that. And look, with regard to this government and healthcare, there was a motion of no confidence a few weeks ago. I laid out our position very clearly in the Dáil. We don't have confidence in the minister. We don't have confidence in the government. On healthcare, on housing, on broadband, take your pick. We're in a very particular international situation at the moment that necessitated us abstaining. My view, Ivan, on healthcare is that the system requires a change of government, right? That's my view and that's what we are working towards. In the meantime, we will do what we can from the opposition benches. We had the terms of reference changed. We did a lot of work on focusing what was going on. Lisa Chambers in Fianna Fáil was the TD who highlighted the delays in cervical check, and we've been pushing very hard on that. So it's deeply frustrating to be an opposition TD. People say to you all the time, oh sure, the easiest position in politics is in opposition. It's not. It's not. It's a terrible position to be in because you go in every day and you see bad things being done to your country and there's very little you can do about them until the next election. So that's what we are doing from opposition.
But this is a systems failure.
I was asked that this morning on another radio show. So, well, what do you not want to see? And I said, you know, what I don't want to see is a minister or a Taoiseach shrugging their shoulders, waving their hands and saying systems failure. And that's exactly what they've done.
The point is this, that construction and capital programmes are not something new. We've built a national roads program and so on. And you know what? This science of quantity surveying, design team, design creep, I mean, it's happening all over the world. And the Intel are building something that's costing I don't know how many billion out in Kildare at the moment. There are disciplines to this and there is no one exercising any discipline here. That's what I call a systems failure.
I agree. And at a political level, right? I'm a politician, so I'm going to focus on the political governance of this, right? What did we have when this broke? The politicians, the Taoiseach and the minister kept saying, oh, well, we have this quantity surveying report and it shows that per square metre, actually, we're in line with bills around the world. And I said, hang on a second. Now, I put this directly to the minister and said, if you believe that, you must actually believe that the 1.4 or 1.7 billion is a reasonable price to pay, do you? And the minister said, yes, I do. And the Taoiseach said, yes, he did. So ultimately, your point, right? Authority has to flow outwards or downwards. And the people atop our cabinet is the Taoiseach and it's the minister. The Taoiseach and the minister have stated on the record that they believe that the current price is a reasonable price. If that's the level of loose control and nonsense that civil servants and board members, who I'm sure are trying their damnedest, are getting... They're getting a message from government saying, are you sure it doesn't really matter? How could it matter?
This report sure, basically says, oh, sure, don't mind it. Look at the vanity of this project and look at the rush we're in. And that excuses everything.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've had enough. All right, Stephen, we will talk about this again. So what does the full extent mean? Like, yeah, a bridging loan for 100 grand is, I'm a few quid short, I need to be tided over for this period. Like, what does the full extent of knowledge about that mean?
Well, that could mean that maybe...
Like, was there a loan at all?
Or maybe not all of the board knew about that in 2017, or indeed a couple of weeks ago, not all of the board knew. These are the questions that are going to have to be answered tomorrow at the committee. It doesn't answer it in the 22-page submission that is made by the president of the FAI.
Okay. Does that mean the FAI are turning Turk on John Delaney?
Well, certainly what they're saying is the board, the president of the board is now admitting and will admit tomorrow when he gives his opening statement, he will admit that in circumstances, this is the correct quotation here, in certain circumstances in April 2017, we didn't report details of our financial situation to Sport Ireland. Now, if you're to read into that, that essentially means we broke the rules when it comes to applying for state funding from Sport Ireland. This is the president of the board of the FAI saying we broke the rules.
Okay.
You can read from that what you will.
Okay. Now, last week, before the Oireachtas Committee, was Ciarán Mulvey, was John Tracy, and Noel Rock got up and said, we should scrap state funding. And people say, oh no, even the chairman of the committee said, oh no, this would hit underage, it would hit coaching, this is, you know, hitting the wrong target. And there was no suggestion from John Tracy that funding would be suspended. What's now happened that they are suspending it?
Well, just to be clear, the suggestion from John Tracy was that we would see how John Delaney and the rest of the FAI got on at this meeting tomorrow, and then the board would meet and we would consider the issue of funding.
The heart specialist told me that I was down to 15% of heart function.
Jesus.
So that's a bit low, isn't it?
And like even working for RTE, that a catch
even,
up with
even
you.
Even allowing
I mean?
That, even taking that into the consideration, yeah. Now, by the way, just can I say, the fittest people on the planet aren't working at 100%. Top-class athletes, say about 80%, maybe 85%. An ordinary fit person, a person who watches their weight, watches what they drink, bloody, bloody, bloody.
Okay.
They're working at about 70 to 75. Okay. But still, 15 is low.
I'm sick of your heart. Just tell me this.
Yeah.
I've heard this story before. What website should people go on to get information on this?
www.knowyourheart.ie.
First question. Who's going to win the two, Sam Maguire and the Liam McCarthy Cup this year?
First answer, I haven't a clue.
Well, I thought you were going to say Galway double.
No, well, I'll say that if you want me to say that. Why not? But the way I put it, Ivan, to people is, if we went back to this time last year, could I have confidently predicted that Limerick were going to win the hurling final?
Could I have confidently
predicted that Tyrone were going to be in the football final? No, I couldn't. So, I mean, I can sit here and I can list you off.
You have no strong opinion.
But
okay.
I have a strong opinion. I think it's up in the air.
That's okay. The other thing I wanted to ask is, I'm going to be 60 in October.
Yeah.
Now, retirement. I'm looking at you and you're the picture of health. What, at some point you've got to retire. And would, if you had a choice between boredom, because you're not crazy, or actually, because my wife is going to retire, enjoying life, what advice would you give to people who are at that point saying, oh, I could never retire, but actually want to retire?
Yeah, that's a difficult question to answer, and for the very simple reason that people who retire are coming from different professions and different walks of life and so on. So what applies to one person...
But how have you found it?
I found it no problem.
With some listener queries, Jeff in County Meath asks, myself and my wife are in our late 50s. We've no pension. We lost it during the crash. We have a house which is mortgage-free and the four kids have all left. So we're thinking of buying a shop unit near us that can be rented out for about 40k and we could live upstairs. Without going into the nitty-gritty of the numbers, would you agree with the principle of what we're thinking of doing?
I would. I think it's, if they've no pension, unfortunately, as they said, lost it during the crash. If they pick the right location, they could probably be fairly certain of a steady rent. They're going to be overhead. They can keep an eye on things. Jeff,
you have a hole in your head thinking of this, because the one thing that's certain is retail property, particularly in provincial towns, is going to take a bath because of online shopping. And I really would be worried that, you know, you might find in 2 years' time you mightn't have a tenant.
Well, you didn't let me finish. The first thing I said was, is 40k enough to live on? I'd suggest it's not. We don't know how much he's going to downsize for, how much he'll make on his current house that's mortgage free. In other words, will he have a big lump sum as
may
well?
May have to pay tax on it?
Yeah. No, but I think I don't disagree with you about the...
The long-term trend on retail property, I think,
good.
Is negative. Not good.
No, not good. I agree with you.
Do you often reach for a crutch, like on a Friday night, you say, I'm going to drink three bottles of wine to make it go away?
Yeah, so that's almost self-soothing.
Would that be a bad sign, like?
Well, it's a sign that a person that would drink like that, if they're soothing, it's self-soothing, they're self-medicating. Lots of people do that with mental health issues and that they use... drugs or alcohol or distraction to actually self-soothe themselves. So it's a very profound sense of being totally depleted in your life.
How long does it take for it to evolve? You know, so, in other words, where you get the early symptoms of all the things you said. In other words, you're feeling tired, you're lower immunity, and then you become a little bit detached and you're a little bit cranky with people, and then it gets worse, you withdraw a little bit. Like, would it happen over a month? Would it happen over a year? Would it happen over a week?
Well, it's more like a medium term than a short term piece. So it's more like 3 months onwards if you're giving a flat out. But for some people in the careers that they work, or they work, whether doctors or nurses or social care workers. And the reason I say them is because I work in a health profession, and I've talked at many conferences, and I've talked to carers in the acquired brain injury family group around the whole area of being burnt out around self, and the importance of self-care, how self-care is critically important to support yourself, to replenish yourself, to if you want, you got to nourish, to flourish, you got to nourish.